Hey everyone, welcome back to our podcast. I'm Allie Holman and I have Zoe Ellis here with me today to discuss the landmark court case Roe v. Wade. Zoe and I are sophomores at Loretto High School where we have taken the AP U.S. Government and Politics course, which we will be using to draw some of our information from today. So Zoe, could you lay out some of the basic facts of the case here?
Yeah, sure. So Roe v. Wade occurred in 1973 when Norma Leah Nelson challenged a Texas law prohibiting abortion. Basically, the 21-year-old was pregnant with her third child when she was looking to have an abortion. So when Nelson was told she couldn't have an abortion after Dallas's County District Attorney Henry Wade enforced a new abortion law, Nelson took the issue to the courts.
So just to be clear, what is the exact issue that this case is dealing with right here?
Well, Roe v. Wade primarily deals with the right to privacy and the constitutionality of that, along with a woman's right to have an abortion.
Right. So let's discuss the arguments made throughout this case. Zoe, would you mind covering Roe's main arguments here?
All right. So for starters, Roe begins stating that this new Texas law is an infringement on a woman's right to privacy.
To add in, could you clarify what this Texas law is requiring exactly?
For the most part, it was preventing a woman from having an abortion unless the mother's life was in danger.
All right. So could you go into more detail on Roe's argument?
Of course. So Roe began to argue that abortion should basically be a fundamental right due to the impact that pregnancy can have on a woman and how it can affect her life more long term. It was argued that an abortion in the first trimester had a death rate 5 times lower than the risk of death from childbirth, and that unwanted pregnancies lead to financial burdens and psychological burdens. Then we see where Roe speaks on believing that prohibiting abortion violates the fundamental rights of doctors to give and provide medical care to these women. Eventually, Roe makes the point that a fetus is not a person when considering the application of the 14th Amendment of Equal Protection Rights.
So would you personally agree that, in the context of what we know here, that this abortion law on Texas under Wade is unconstitutionally vague?
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially seeing that as this was not supported by compelling state interests, but then again, on the other hand, Wade made arguments that rebutted Roe's main points. Would you like to point out those statements?
Yeah, so when we look at our understanding of Wade's side of the argument, we can see where Wade made it a point to say that there is no right to having an abortion specifically listed within the U.S. Constitution. So there was no mention of it in the text, and there was nothing to suggest that framers of the 14th Amendment intended to protect such a right. Then Wade goes on to argue that even if the right to privacy or the right to a woman's privacy is implied in the document, that the Texas law is still supported by a compelling state interest.
And how did Wade respond to the question of whether a fetus is considered to be a person or not?
So Wade will basically react here by arguing that a fetus is indeed a person. Therefore, abortion would deprive the fetus of one of its fundamental rights, the right to life, found in Articles 12 through 35 of the U.S. Constitution.
So would Wade also argue that the law in Texas was not unconstitutionally vague?
Yeah, so Wade did argue that, in fact, whereas later on throughout the case, Wade brings it to attention that Griswold protected maternal privacy, not so much the actual right of a woman to choose to have an abortion or not.
So after understanding the facts of the case and the main arguments made by each side involved, what exactly can we take away from the rulings and upholdings of the court from the case?
Well, when we're processing the ruling of Roe v. Wade, we know that the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment found in the U.S. Constitution is going to provide us the fundamental right to a woman's privacy. With that fundamental right to privacy, a pregnant woman's right to choose whether to have an abortion or not is now protected by the law.
Right, so we know that what you said right there was the majority opinion, but what about the concurring and dissenting opinions?
Well, you had 3 concurring opinions in Roe v. Wade. One was provided by Chief Justice Berger, who agreed with the majority opinion, but had a minor concern that the court had taken notice to scientific and medical data rather than basing their ruling strictly off of the Constitution. Then you had Justice Douglas, who also agreed that the patient's right to privacy when it comes to choosing her own physician was violated, and that creating laws prohibited abortion potentially endangered her life or health. And finally, you had Justice Stewart's opinion, who had actually dissented in Griswold v. Connecticut. Instead, he cited many court cases under privacy that he found were not as important as to a woman's privacy in regards to an abortion.
And the dissenting opinion?
So Justices Watt and Rehnquist provided the dissenting opinions. The majority opinion argued that a woman's right to an abortion was protected under the Constitution, but White claimed that such contents could not be found in the Constitution, while also believing that because abortion was such a sensitive issue that it should be left to the people in state legislatures. Justice Rehnquist argued against the ruling that abortion fell under a woman's right to privacy, claiming that the transaction between a licensed physician and a client was not private in regards to the common understanding of the word.
Right, so besides upholding the Due Process Clause, which protects a person from the denial of any of their fundamental rights like liberty, property, and in this case, life, does Roe v. Wade create any new requirements or rules?
So this case actually creates a precedent that as a woman does have the right to choose to have an abortion, there are restrictions and limits on this right. Now a woman can have an abortion in the first trimester only, which is the first 12 weeks of her pregnancy. But even though Roe v. Wade has set the standards, as some might say, on this issue, abortion is still a very widely debated topic, being very controversial for all parties.
Yeah, I agree here. So as conservatives typically fall along the pro-life border and liberals usually promote the freedom of being pro-choice, we see many challenges to Roe v. Wade currently. We're seeing cases like June Medical Services versus Gee, Whole Woman's Health Organization versus Thomas Dobbs, and Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky versus Commissioner of the Indiana State Department of Health today that are challenging Roe v. Wade or are challenging parts within or relating to the landmark case.
So, correct me if I'm wrong here, but multiple states have passed the fetal heartbeat law within the past 5 years. Zoe, could you explain the fetal heartbeat law and what its main motives consist of?
Yeah, sure. So the fetal heartbeat law that we're currently seeing an uprising in basically prohibits an abortion after the fetus's heartbeat can first be detected, which usually occurs around week 6 of the pregnancy. And the thing is that it's at the 6th week of pregnancy that most women realize they are pregnant. So by the time a woman realizes she's pregnant, it's very likely that the fetus already has a heartbeat, which means she wouldn't be able to get an abortion. And so with this new law, we can see certain states' attempts at reducing the abortion rate post-Roe v. Wade, where 12 weeks is the marker for a legal abortion.
So with research, we found that over 20 states have actually enforced this fetal heartbeat law. Which states are we looking at here?
Well, taking into consideration that, once again, conservatives tend to be pro-life, we can see a good majority of the southern states that house the conservatives to be the focus group on passing and supporting this law.
So states like Tennessee, Alabama, Texas, and say Florida have enforced the fetal heartbeat law?
They have, but we also have states that are not in the southern region like Ohio, Wyoming, and Minnesota who have taken to enforcing this law also, which basically allows us to see just how many states are willing to challenge Roe v. Wade and to overturn its precedents. You even have laws like the one Alabama just passed that pretty much ban abortion entirely. And the reason for that is because they know it's going to be challenged. They know it's going to be taken to the Supreme Court. And because it's made up of more conservative judges, they're hoping that it'll overturn the decision in Roe v. Wade.
Now, I know we're seeing numerous challenges to Roe v. Wade with new laws like the fetal heartbeat law here, but let's talk about our average U.S. citizens. What exactly are those individuals who have less direct governmental power doing in an attempt to overturn the case?
So just to be clear, we're talking about pro-life advocates?
Sure. We just want to grasp an idea of how they're taking action today in an effort to revise Roe v. Wade.
So commonly, we'll find our pro-life advocates at rallies and protests, like the one we've seen recently in Washington, D.C., there we had hundreds of thousands of pro-life supporters protesting with signs, posters, etc. on the National Mall in hopes of challenging Roe v. Wade.
I see. So before we go, would you want to give us a quick overview of Roe v. Wade and the impact it's had?
Yeah, of course. So to sum everything up, you had this woman, Norma Leigh Nelson, who was seeking out an abortion. However, Texas law prohibited this, and so it was taken to the Supreme Court, where they ruled 7-2 that under the Due Process Clause and the right to privacy found in the 14th Amendment, that a woman did in fact have the right to an abortion.
And with that, I believe it's time to wrap up today's podcast over Roe v. Wade, dealing with the AP U.S. Government and Politics course. Thanks for listening, and we hope to catch you next time.